Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Advocates for gun reform hold a Monday rally outside of Florida's capitol, sending a clear message to lawmakers who do not take action.
When we have lawmakers that don't listen to these children, we need to vote them out!
Also tonight, many of those who traveled to Tallahassee today also showed up for the first hearing of a pair of gun safety bills.
I find it remarkable that we are talking about weapons and putting more into a school. We worry about our children having drugs, and not once do I ever hear anybody say, let's give them more drugs.
We'll also discover what all the focus on gun and school safety is doing to the legislature's other priorities, such as trying to work out a new gaming accord with the Seminole tribe and, the state budget. Just 2 weeks left to go in the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. And if you thought the protesting and lobbying about gun safety was over in Tallahassee after last week's massive student march on the Capitol, think again. The aftermath of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting has flipped Florida's legislature, changing its focus to debates on firearms and school safety. Supporters of gun reform rallied outside the Capitol today with one clear message: action. Andrew Quintana has that story.
Hundreds of activists are marching onto the steps of Florida's Capitol building, greeting lawmakers who will be hearing new gun legislation throughout the week.
Does everyone understand how majority rules? We all know that, right? We take a vote, majority rules.
Advocates, like House Democratic Leader Jeanette Cruz, are frustrated with the Florida legislature's inaction on the topic of gun control over the last few years. She is proposing 17 bills, one for each victim of the Parkland shooting.
Well, the majority that's ruling here now, the leadership that's ruling here now, of those 17 bills that have to see a committee first, how many bills do you think they heard? Zero. Zero attempts to make our families safe.
Bella Urbina is a sophomore at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. During her research on the topic of gun control for the school's debate team, she found a majority of Americans favored background checks. She says refusing to implement laws that address that is a clear violation of democracy.
Every universal background check poll that I looked out stated at least 85% of American people want a federal universal background check. This fundamentally comes down to American democracy. Is it working for most people, or is it working for a very small amount? This is why we need to put the politics aside and use our common sense to save lives.
Fort Lauderdale Democratic Senator Gary Farmer says gun control is a touchy subject in the legislature, but he hopes recent efforts by activists will push lawmakers to take action and address these issues.
And it's efforts like this and your voices being heard that lets them know we are not going away until the discussion and the solution includes common sense gun safety reforms that 70% or more of Floridians support.
Meanwhile, activists at the rally have a plan for lawmakers who avoid the discussion or fail to act on the subject of gun reform.
Vote them out! Vote them out! Vote them out! Vote them out!
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Andrew Quintana.
Several gun safety proposals passed their first Florida Senate committee. As Sasha Cordner reports, while top GOP lawmakers are calling the effort bipartisan, some of the Democrats who are pushing for more gun reforms don't quite see things that way.
Hundreds of people crowded inside and outside a Senate committee room Monday for the first hearing of the gun safety bills in the Senate Rules Committee. Catherine Guerra and Bella Urbina were two of the people who spoke. They're students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, where 17 people were killed and more than a dozen injured.
The only argument that most people are saying is that it's for sport or for hunting or self-defense. An AR-15 is not meant for self-defense. You would not use it for a personal, something that has high velocity with rapid fire to defend yourself or for sport.
The assault rifles are meant for killing things like at a rapid amount of time. So when you go hunting, it's not like there's going to be 15 deer lined up in a line and you're going to go bop, 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 bop and kill all those deer. So, yeah.
Both students wanted an assault weapons ban, which is not included in the gun safety bills. What is included is increasing the minimum age for a person to purchase and own any firearm to 21, banning the sale of bump stocks, and providing time for background checks. Law enforcement may also seize weapons from someone who's deemed mentally ill, involuntarily committed to an institution under the Baker Act, and is deemed a threat. A person who's mentally ill would also be prohibited from possessing or purchasing a gun. Another is a public records exemption to protect the personal information of victims and their families. And Bradenton Republican Senator Bill Galvano says there are provisions promoting school safety.
That would be accomplished by codifying and enhancing the activities of the multi-agency network for students with emotional and behavioral disabilities, requiring each school district to designate a school safety specialist and each school to establish a threat assessment team to provide a coordinated approach to evaluating and responding to students who pose a threat.
There's also a school marshal program allowing for certain designated people who have completed law enforcement officer training to have a gun on school grounds. That NRA-backed provision could include teachers.
Now, as far as putting guns in a classroom with a teacher, I think that no matter how you dress it up, whether you say I'm going to take a police officer and turn them into a teacher, or take a teacher and turn them into a police officer, or you say I'm going to train them, I think you are still missing the fundamental point, is that putting more weapons into our school does not make anyone safer.
That's Senate Democratic Leader Oscar Brainin speaking at a press conference Monday with other Democratic lawmakers from both the House and Senate. He thinks the legislation goes too far.
What we are doing with that proposal is we have gone from not doing enough to actually doing harm. And that, I think, is a real problem. It's one thing for me to stand here and say, this bill doesn't go far enough. These things that are done are good, but you could do more. It's another thing when we start saying that we're doing something that, in my opinion, will put our children, my children, in harm's way.
Three Senate Democrats tried and failed to tack on amendments to the bill, which includes getting rid of the Marshall Program and an assault weapons ban. One amendment by Senator Brainin did unanimously pass. It creates a medical reimbursement program for victims of mass shootings. Meanwhile, over on the House side, top leaders say they're also working with Democrats on the issue, like Representative Katie Edwards Walpole of Plantation and Representative Jared Moskowitz of Coral Springs. Moskowitz says in speaking with the Parkland shooting survivors, his goal is to try and get something out now in the last couple weeks and try to do more in future legislative sessions.
Everybody has their role. So there are Democrats out there that are helping push, right, that are bringing kids up here, that are organizing rallies, that are talking. They're helping push the issue, right? I look at my role is to get something done.
The House version of the bill was filed Monday and is scheduled to be taken up in the Appropriations Committee Tuesday morning. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
A Senate committee today backed confirmation of five state agency heads as it considered dozens of Governor Rick Scott's appointments. The Senate Ethics and Elections Committee recommended confirmation of Noah Valenstein, Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection, Philip Sutton, Executive Director of the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, Jim Papel, Secretary of the Florida Lottery, Aaron Rock, Secretary of the Department of Management Services, and Michael Dew as Secretary of the Department of Transportation. Four of the agency heads didn't get too much discussion today, but senators did pose a series of questions to Dew about such things as the gas tax, which funds road projects. The main matter of concern was how the growth in the use of electric cars and fuel-efficient vehicles would impact gas tax revenues and what Dew thought might be done about it, to which he replied he'd watch the trend so it doesn't sneak up on the state. The full Senate ultimately has to approve all confirmations. Still to come on Capitol Report, in the raging debate over guns and school safety, the issue of juvenile mental health keeps coming up. But there are those who insist you get what you pay for.
There has been an increase in the need for mental health services. And when those services are not provided, then the consequences can be seen.
And among so many other issues, gambling appears to be overshadowed this session.
Between the budget and dealing with the issues and the failures of government that have come to our attention with the Parkland situation.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
Back on Friday, Governor Rick Scott announced his plan for responding to the mass shooting at Douglas Stoneman High. It includes $50 million in additional funding to expand mental health services for children and youth. The move comes as lawmakers consider the recommendations of a panel they created last year to study the statewide rise in minors being involuntarily examined under the Baker Act. We get more on that story from Margie Menzel.
Well, I actually walked through the steps of the Baker Act with my child.
That's Nancy Daniels, a lobbyist for the Florida Public Defenders Association. Her teenage foster son was Baker Acted after a breakdown, having previously been misdiagnosed as ADHD.
He was actually transported by law enforcement from the hospital to the receiving facility. Seeing him in a law enforcement car, I wasn't in the car, I was following it. We went into a cold room, a padded room, and it was a really tough, he was already, you know, suffering from what was later diagnosed with bipolar disease.
Daniels represented the parents of children who'd been evaluated under the Baker Act on the Task Force on the Involuntary Examination of Minors, which was convened last summer. Under state law, an involuntary exam is required if there's reason to believe someone has a mental illness and, without treatment, will harm him or herself or someone else. According to the Department of Children and Families, the number of minors involuntarily examined under the Baker Act increased by 50% in the 5 years following fiscal year 2011-2012. That's why the legislature created the task force last year, to study the trends and alternatives.
For 3 years in a row, the number one concern among superintendents in Florida is a mental health issue.
Tallahassee Senator Bill Montford leads the Florida Association of District School Superintendents. He's also a former high school teacher, principal, and superintendent. And he says the mental health challenges for schools are far greater today than they were 10 or 12 years ago.
We don't know why. We've discussed that. The practitioners in the schools, that means teachers, bus drivers, everybody associated with children, we can't put our finger on exactly why, but we know that there has been an increase in the need for mental health services. And when those services are not provided, then the consequences can be seen. And we know that.
The task force's findings showed 20% of kids between 13 and 18 live with a mental health condition, and that suicide is the third leading cause of death for youths between the ages of 10 and 24. What's more, Daniels says, the panel found children who grew up after 9/11 through the recession and the advent of social media are stressed in ways their elders can barely grasp.
Pressures on kids these days are enormous. Compared to what we all went through, my age group, I'm in my 60s. Of course, we had high school peer pressure, competition, all the kind of stuff that you go through in adolescence. But now it's aggravated by social media, the bullying, cyberbullying.
Daniel says it's much harder for high schoolers now than it was for her age group, and maybe even for the generation after hers. And she notes that while the task force was created after a 50% spike in juvenile Baker Acts between 2011 and 2016, the increase was fully 86% between 2000 and 2016. The task force didn't identify specific causes for the rise in Baker Acts, citing inadequate data and the complexity of the issue. But it did point to the limited availability of and access to treatment services, whether for prevention, early intervention, or follow-up. And Senator Montford says without those services, schools must choose between removing students whose behavior prevents others from learning and keeping them on campus without some form of help.
And the question is, do we have the courage in Florida to say these are expensive solutions, but we're willing to pay for it? And that's where the Florida legislature comes in. It's a tough question that's got to be answered. And my position is, yes, in the long run, first of all, it's less expensive if you address the issue up front and help these children. And second of all, it's morally the right thing to do, period.
Governor Scott has proposed expanding mental health service teams statewide to provide counseling, crisis management, and other services. He also called for direct counseling services to students at every school, saying every student must have the opportunity to meet one-on-one with a mental health professional and receive ongoing counseling as needed. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Margie Menzel.
Florida lawmakers really only have one job amidst all the Sturm und Drang, though, and it's really not to make laws, it's to pass a budget. But as Lynn Hatter reports, the shooting at that South Florida high school and its resulting debate over gun control has pushed the budgetary task to the back burner, and that could throw the legislature into overtime.
House Rules Chairman Jose Oliva acknowledged the possibility of an extended session recently when asked for a status update on the budget by reporters. He said he hoped it wouldn't come to that.
Should session get extended, and certainly not what I would like to see, but should it get extended, it would probably give us some opportunity to further flesh out some of these things. But I don't anticipate that that'll be the case. I think the hope is to finish on time and bring something forth on a bipartisan way that the entire House can vote for.
It was one of a few warning signs that this year's lawmaking session may not conclude by its slated March 9th deadline. And a day after Oliva's remarks, House Speaker Richard Corcoran was more blunt about it.
The chairman of appropriations and the president of the Senate need to grow up.
The task of ironing out what's shaping up to be about an $87 billion spending plan is not easy. The budget is broken down by category and agency, and under each of those are various programs and entities. Each year, lawmakers tinker with the price tags, adding and subtracting dollars, until they come up with something both the House and Senate, and enough members in each, can agree on. Normally, the chambers would have already agreed on allocations. That's how much to spend on each category. And there would be joint committees of both chambers meeting to determine the finer points. But Corcoran claims the process is at a standstill.
I've had conversations. Chairman Olivas had conversations. Chairman Trujillo's had conversations. Chairman Sproul's had conversations. We don't know what to say more to the Senate in terms of let's start negotiations. They've completely stonewalled us. They're acting like kindergartners.
Part of the problem likely resides in the priority legislation of both men. Corcoran is pushing a massive education measure that contains language that could severely cripple the power of Florida's teachers' unions. That's so far a no-go in the Senate. And Negron is pushing a bill he claims will make Florida's public universities more competitive. That's being met with pushback in the House. Yet, the Senate president maintains everything is fine.
As all of you know, I've chaired the Appropriations Committee in the House and in the Senate, so I have 4 years of that experience, and also done large subcommittees as well. And I'm very optimistic that that we'll be able to resolve our differences in an amicable way. And I think the leaders that we have in both the House and the Senate will help us get there.
Now there are more speed bumps in the road to session's end, including late additions, like more money for mental health workers in schools and increases to shore up school safety. Both come with a far larger price tag than lawmakers initially intended. But Senate Budget Chairman Rob Bradley, a target of Corcoran's ire, says there's money in place to cover it. Still, lawmakers may have to back away from a favorite issue like tax cuts.
There is no price one can put on the safety of our children. And so certainly if we can do something to protect our children and we have to forego tax cuts to do it, then that would be a decision that all of us would happily and eagerly make.
The chambers approved separate funding proposals earlier in the month that are about $100 million apart. However, there are big differences in several key areas like education, where the chambers differ by $600 million when it comes to funding higher education. If lawmakers get to March 9th with no budget in place, the governor will have to call a special session focused only on the budget. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Well, if you're a fan of that AMC Channel TV show, The Walking Dead, you already know never to count zombies completely out. Even if you think you've killed them deader than the dead they already were, they can sometimes surprise you and reanimate themselves. Well, things in the Florida legislature are a lot like that, especially as the session is winding down. With less than 2 weeks left in this year's session, a proposal to repeal the state's no-fault auto insurance system has magically reemerged in the Florida Senate. The Senate Health and Human Services Appropriations Subcommittee is slated tomorrow to take up that chamber's version of the proposal filed by Republican Senator Tom Lee. The bill was approved by the Senate Banking and Insurance Committee back on January 10th, but had not been heard again. The House version passed the full chamber way back on January 12th and then headed over to the Senate, where it promptly vanished from sight. By way of background, Florida used a no-fault system for decades. Motorists have been required to carry $10,000 in personal injury protection coverage, or PIP for short, to help pay medical bills after accidents. But in recent years, lawmakers have been looking repeatedly at repealing the no-fault system and requiring motorists to carry bodily injury coverage. Advocates say that would greatly reduce auto accident fraud and eventually lower everyone's auto insurance rates. Opponents say it would jack up insurance rates immediately, and those rates would be unlikely to go down. But even if the Senate bill gets the green light, there are still some differences with the already passed House version. Those would have to be worked out before lawmakers leave town March 9th. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, lawmakers are pushing a pair of gambling overhaul bills forward. But Regan McCarthy reports with just 2 weeks left in the legislative session, leaders admit their priorities may lie elsewhere.
This week, lawmakers are focused on a response following the school shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland that left 17 dead. The legislature is also scrambling to find common ground on budget plans. And Senate Appropriations Chairman Rob Bradley says that leaves little time for much else.
You know, between the budget and dealing with the issues and the failures of government that have come to our attention with the Parkland situation, that has certainly got our attention. Really, to above and beyond any other things we're dealing with right now.
And besides, Bradley says, an agreement on gambling has a ways to go.
Gaming has its challenges independent of the circumstances we find ourselves in, in that we're having to, you know, deal with those two major issues of budget and Parkland.
Bradley's viewpoint isn't far off from one expressed by House Speaker-designate Jose Oliva.
A lot of our bandwidth is going to be taken up. We've still got a budget to pass, and obviously we've got some sort of bipartisan bill that we've got to pass dealing with the tragedy at Stoneman Douglas.
Oliva says he's not confident lawmakers can come to an agreement on a proposed gambling overhaul in the time that's left this legislative session. Even so, a measure sponsored by St. Cloud Republican Representative Mike LaRosa got a hearing in the House Committee on Commerce Monday.
Just as a highlight, the bill creates a flat 20-year term extension to the Seminole Compact. It authorizes no new gamings throughout the bill. The tribe would ultimately keep blackjack for 20 years at its existing 5 facilities. It limits the Florida Lottery's games to what it currently has.
Several major differences remain between the House and Senate plans. One has to do with so-called referendum counties, or counties that have passed local referendums in favor of allowing paramutuals in their communities to operate slot machines. Senate President Joe Negron has said that's a priority for him in any gambling legislation that moves forward this session.
They had a referendum, and they decided they wanted to have additional slots as part of the gaming landscape in their community, and I think that needs to be given great weight. And it's hard for me to envision a gaming bill that could get to 21 votes in the Senate and at the same time ignore the clear direction and mandate of the voters.
But a provision to approve slots in referendum counties is not included in the House bill. That doesn't make sense to Gretna City Manager Antonio Jefferson. Gadsden County is one of the referendum counties.
The bill that's before you, in essence, is the equivalent of doing nothing on gaming. And what I mean is that I watched a commercial over the weekend that said the Seminoles was investing quite a few billion dollars in a project that was going to create 20,000 additional jobs. While I'm very happy for that for Floridians that are going to take advantage of that, I'm very sad that in the community of Gretna and Gadsden County that we've got $250 million investment in our community. That's going to create thousands of jobs, both direct and indirect, and that's not a consideration by this legislature.
Meanwhile, House Speaker Richard Corcoran says anything that could be considered a gambling expansion is a non-starter in his chamber. Some say this session might be the last chance for lawmakers to legislate gambling. A proposed constitutional amendment is heading for the ballot in November that would give voters control over any future changes to casino gambling. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Corder, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Margie Menzel and Andrew Quintana, along with our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.